Welcome back to season one of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking the snubs and dubs of the 69th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, what's up?
Well, howdy there, partner. Little inside joke for this episode.
What's that referring to, Jason?
I don't know.
What's the howdy?
I don't know. What does howdy mean? Howdy you do?
I need help.
Is it short for howdy you do?
Is
howdy
it?
Do there.
Oh.
I have no idea. I've just spitballing
here. I mean, it makes
here.
Sense. And if yeah. it's true, I kind of feel stupid for not seeing it sooner.
Yeah, let's say it's true. Let's
okay,
decide
cool.
it's true.
Yeah, that's it. It's on the Wikipedia page right now.
Yep.
Yeah, before we get into it, you watched anything in the last couple days? Because we haven't had long before recording this one.
So I have been watching Schitt's Creek with my partner.
Nice.
It has taken us basically 8 months, and we have now gotten into season three.
Nice.
We are very slow. She might blame it on the fact that my attention span runs out after two episodes of anything I watch.
Right.
I would also blame it on that because it does happen. But the other night we watched three episodes just to take us into season three, and it's beautiful.
Good.
Schitt's Creek's good stuff.
I've heard it's a good show, and I've been meaning to watch it. Also, because it's also good. A Canadian show, isn't it?
It is also a Canadian show.
Been meaning to check that out.
It's a slow start, but it's worth it.
A lot of these half-hour comedies are, though.
Yeah.
They have, like, weird season ones where it, like, takes you a little bit of time to get with the characters and get into
yeah.
the flow of things. But once it's got its rhythm, like, it starts to hit.
Oh, once you start sympathizing for these people, oh, your world changes. You become a better person for it. It's got kind of a wholesome style.
Yeah.
Much like your Ted Lasso's today.
Nice.
But a little Canadian flair. Some sex appeal from the Levy family. It's a home run.
Good.
How about you, Kyle?
I saw Shang-Chi again. I went
again,
with
nice.
My mom and stepdad, and because they had been meaning to see it. So I went with them and kind of just reaffirmed my views on it.
Yep. Didn't change the rating at all?
Not really, no. There were some scenes that I wanted to watch again because they were just really cool and really mm-hmm. high action. But like the slow parts and the rough dialogue still hit a little bit harsh. Yeah.
Still didn't get better?
No.
It's too bad. I thought they'd fix it between showings. Yeah. Damn it.
All right. Well, of course, in season one, we've been talking about the movies from 1996. And for episode 7, we are going to be talking about the movie Lone Star. So Jason, I doubt you've seen it before, but had you even heard of this movie before?
Oh Lord, no. I had no idea that this movie existed until I watched it.
Yeah.
I didn't remember it any time that we talked about what we're
right.
watching next.
Yeah.
And then I didn't remember it when we got home.
Yeah.
And when we watch movies, we will sometimes rent them on a joint YouTube subscription that we
yeah.
have. And I didn't remember the name until I just clicked to see what you watched last because I was watching it right after and it was Lone Star.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, it's something just so forgettable about
this
okay, well, yeah,
name.
Before we even got into mm-hmm. it, there was something just forgettable about it.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, what quality, what something about
yeah,
Texas. I didn't want to mess with it.
And like, it's not really a popular movie. It is an independent film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got good stars in it, but it like, it. I don't know if it made like a big impact, like something like some of the other movies we've talked about have,
yeah.
especially like Trainspotting and Fargo and especially Independence Day. So this one is maybe our least known
yeah.
film so
oh,
far.
Oh, it's slept on. It is
yeah.
big time slept on.
Yeah.
Did you know anything about it beforehand?
I didn't. And in fact, it was what I knew about it was that Matthew McConaughey was in it because I saw from like the poster and like when I checked the trailer like the night before I watched it, I was like, oh, Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm. He's kind of not in this
He's
movie.
He's hardly in it. That is,
yeah.
It's basically a cameo.
It is.
It could be considered a cameo if he was like some huge dude. He'd be like, hey, that's whoever. Because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but we'll get into it. If you were interested in Lone Star, I've included links to the physical media related to this movie. I don't actually think there's a Blu-ray, though, because I kind of looked it up and
wow.
it was like, there wasn't anything I could find, but there might be a DVD. I'll include that link in the show notes below. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow our general link and it'll help out the show in the process. One last reminder that this is a spoiler-filled podcast, so if you haven't seen Lone Star yet and want to, go ahead and do so, or if you don't mind, we're going to jump into it now. So, wow, 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 in the Texas border town of Frontera. I'm not going to do that.
That wasn't bad. We'll
yeah, it was good.
Extrapolate that
Sheriff
out.
Sam
Audience,
Deeds.
Add that to yourself.
Sheriff Sam Deeds, played by Chris Cooper, digs up the past when he finds an old skull in the desert. As he traces the murder of Sheriff Charlie Wade, played by Kris Kristofferson, 40 years earlier, Deed's investigation points towards his late father, the much-loved Deputy Buddy Deeds. Ignoring warnings not to delve any deeper, Sam rekindles a romance with his high school sweetheart while bringing up old tensions in the town and exposing secrets long put to rest. Lone Star is a 1996 neo-western mystery film written, edited, and directed by John Sayles. It stars Chris Cooper as Sam Deeds, Elizabeth Pena as Pilar Cruz, Joe Morton as Delmore Payne, Ron Canada. That's such a great last name.
That's incredible.
Ron Canada as Otis Payne, Clifton James as Mayor Hollis Podge, Kris Kristofferson as Charlie Wade, Matthew McConaughey as Buddy Deeds, and Frances McDormand as Bunny. In another Frances McDormand 1996 appearance. She's just busy this year.
Folks, she's pretty good.
We haven't even gotten through 10 movies yet, and she's been through in three of them. The runtime is 135 minutes, making it one of the longest movies we've watched so far. It's not that perfect 90-minute runtime.
It's not even close.
No. And it released in 1996, of course. It premiered at the Cannes Film Festival on May 10th and then released wide on June 21st. So, Jason, what'd you think of Lone Star?
Yeah, I really liked it.
Really?
I really liked it. It was a very good movie. I really enjoyed the relationships, which is kind of funny because none of the characters themselves were like incredibly interesting. Like,
yeah.
Especially Mr. Sam Deeds was just really boring as a human being and character, but he still had like an interesting story and the interactions that he had with other people. Everyone else around him worked enough to make it interesting. So the story was good. I really liked what they were, you know, getting at with the film. It's definitely like a massive commentary on
race relationships and
Texas.
Yeah, Texas.
So I had a great time with it. How about you?
What a snooze fest.
Oh my God.
It's so fucking boring.
Oh my God.
I was smiling there because while you were being happy, because I was like, this might be our first disagreement. I didn't like this.
Really?
Really did.
You're sleeping on Lone Star.
I was so tuned out. I like the mystery just kind of started getting boring for me. Like, and I didn't really care.
That's so weird. I mean, like, that's fair. You're allowed your own opinion.
And maybe this movie wasn't like for me. Which is
weird.
Well,
you're not a Texan.
I know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But like, I really thought that this would be something I liked. Mm-hmm. And I went in with expectations that it might be something I liked, especially after watching the trailer. Because like, I liked the actors in it and it looked pretty intense. But I just couldn't get into it. Like, once it started, like, it kind of just kept trucking along at the same pace. And I just found myself getting more and more tuned out. And but.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad we're finally going to have that fist fight we've been talking about. Unbelievable.
The audience is not actually listening to this episode because our disagreements just got too extreme.
Your computer.
Do we want to break down the plot?
Let's break down the plot. So the opening begins with two men searching through the Texan desert. Later we find out that these two men are named Cliff, who is an army surgeon, and his pal Mikey, who is just some dude. Mikey has a little metal detector and he finds some human remains due to a Masonic ring that the skeleton was kind of wearing, kind of beside him. So when they dig up these body parts, they call in the one man who can do this job, Sheriff Sam Deeds, the Sheriff of Frontera, who comes and starts a brief investigation, but they just kind of wait for the coroner and his men to come do some good old investigation and find out who this body is, if he was murdered, and where to go from there. In fact, Sam drops the line when talking to Mikey that it might not be a crime scene, but this country's seen a good number of disagreements over the years. And that becomes a central theme. They talk a lot about the history of war over this territory, a lot about the demarcation lines, discussing who really owns anything. Was this bloodshed worth it? But that's for later, because right now we're going to cut back to a school scene where a elementary teacher, who is the female lead named Pilar, is telling a concerned parent that this is a safe school. And really, they break down the different ethnicity mix and how people are still getting along just fine. But she finds out from another teacher that her son, Amado, is not at school. Mm-hmm. So she's about to absolutely drop some hellish rain fire down as a mother when we cut to Amado getting arrested for being in possession of stolen property. He is installing some stolen speakers into a car.
Yeah.
Gets run down by the popo.
Yeah, unfortunate for him, because like, he didn't steal it. He was just installing it for them.
Exactly. He was just trying to help out some friends, be a good mechanic pal, but because they're stolen, the whole gaggle gets thrown into prison. After they get arrested, we cut to a restaurant where a table of old men are sitting around regaling tales of the former sheriff, Buddy Deeds, who will be memorialized through a bust outside of the newly renamed courthouse that has been named in his honor. Sam Deeds, the current sheriff, shows up and the conversation transitions to naming rights of buildings. One old-timer mentions that he's upset about the number of things named after Martin Luther King Jr. and how white people can't get one measly courthouse.
Why does that sound like something that some people would say still nowadays?
Like, I know. What a great commentary.
Yeah.
That
it's
really
a timeless commentary.
Still transcends time.
It's stupid that it still transcends it 25 years
yeah.
later. But yeah, it's still like you can still look back in this mirror and see the world you currently live in.
After saying that there's too many buildings named after Martin Luther King Jr., the same man makes some racist comments at the expense of First Nation groups and the Native Mexicans in the area, which Sam mentions that were here before any of them were, and that also those demographics outnumber white people in this town 19 to 1. So, you know, maybe all the buildings named after people who had been here before, maybe that's a bit more representative and not naming it after, you know, 5% of the population.
Yeah.
So Hollis, who is, I believe, the town mayor currently, yep. He tells the tale of how Buddy Deeds, which is Sam's father, became sheriff. Hollis and Buddy were both deputies under Sheriff Charlie Wade, describing Wade as a man that took a healthy bite out of everything that came through this town. Charlie Wade is a horrible person. He sucks quite a bit, was racist, crooked, really just generally abused the entire town for his own profit. Yeah. No one quite liked him, but he had too much power to be overthrown.
Yeah, no one. He's the type of guy that like nobody wants to stand up to because like he can get away with so much. And there's a lot of good scenes where that's demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
And this was actually part of the movie that I liked.
Yeah.
Was like these flashbacks where you go back and see Chris Christopherson as Charlie Wade. Because like he was a pretty empowering presence in this movie.
Chris Christopherson? Try Chris Christopherson. Because Buddy was on this movie. Oh, not Buddy.
Buddy was Wade. Also on this movie.
Buddy was also on. But Wade was on this movie. You hated him immediately.
Oh, yeah.
After Charlie Wade talks about shaking down some extortion money from a local bar owner in the area, Buddy Deeds disagrees with him and kind of tells him to kick dust and that he's not going to be part of the system, man.
This was also a scene that I really liked.
This is good.
McConaughey was so good.
Even
I wanted more of him.
His facial expression in this is so good, where he's like confidently shutting down Wade, but you can see he's still just a young buck.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's putting on the big muchacho show, like he's probably still feeling pretty scared inside because everyone knows that Wade has killed before, and heck, he'll do it again.
Oh, yeah.
And as a result of Buddy starting this standoff between him and Hollis, they both mention threats of quitting, firing, murder, and jail time. But ultimately, Buddy tells Wade to solder off, and he kind of turns tail and leaves, but pretty much implies that he'll be back to kill him later, which is a pretty big Wade move. But Buddy does drop one really good line when he's talking to Wade and says, "You ever shoot a man who is looking you in the eye, Charlie?"
This was really good.
That was a powerful line, because as we witness his murders later, he never is. It's always when there's a massive power imbalance that they didn't have any chance, and he was just kind of murdering people in cold blood.
Yeah.
But after that, we fade back to Hollis in the modern day, ending his story, explaining that after that night, Wade had gone missing with $10,000, never to be seen again. And of course, this money was stolen from the police. From somewhere in that budget line, and no one from that town ever heard of him again. After that scene, we cut over to the army barracks where a new colonel, Delmore Payne, is addressing his troops for the first time. He's giving them the lowdown that he is one tight ass and will be running a slick ship to the recruits. That's really all that is. He's just laying down the law.
Yeah.
Because after that, we cut over to the bar, now being run by Big O. Otis, and we see the colonel's son, Chet, walking into the club, trying to find Otis, using nothing but a wrapper from a hot sauce bottle that he had found that belonged to Big O, who'd been winning awards around the county side. But unfortunately, while Chet's looking around for Big O, some gunshots ring out, and two men go to the ground. Big O catches up to Chet, tells him that he was never here tonight, and to take the back exit to kind of save him. So you can kind of tell that Big O knows there's something about this boy.
Yeah, do you think he knew exactly who he was?
Yeah, he mentioned it later that he knew immediately that Chet was his grandson.
Yeah.
And that Delmore Payne, the new colonel, is actually Otis's son and Chet's father. So that's that lineage. Yeah. We cut from that to a school meeting of parents of various demographics arguing about the curriculum being taught in reference to the Battle of the Alamo. The argument is around providing the full picture of the Alamo, which Pilar is trying to do when she's teaching her students, with the Hispanic parents wanting representation from the Mexican side of this battle versus the American-centric retelling that the white parents are trying to push onto the classroom.
Classic Karen shit.
Classic Karen shit. Now, this really spoke to me because we see this stuff all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
If you look at, like, especially, like, in really deep Republican states, I guess kind of really anywhere now in the states, when there are, like, meetings about curriculum, it gets hot and fiery, and we see some radical takes being thrown around that they want in the classroom.
Yeah.
There was recently a large argument about critical race theory, which is something that had never been taught in the school because it's a pretty niche legal understanding of, I believe, an offshoot of like contract law or something like that. Don't quote me. I'm not a lawyer. But it was one of those manufactured issues where no one was actually trying to teach it, but it became like a scary buzzword because it sounds like you're trying to speak about, you know, race theory and things like that. But it's not. No one ever taught it. So it just kind of became like an outpouring against the education system. That's a whole separate issue. But you can kind of see the parallels there where there's still a lot of loud, angry voices trying to shape the curriculum to be how they want to see the world instead of a more nuanced look that appreciates both sides of issues. There was one particular exchange that really captivated what this argument was about with one of, the, I believe, the teachers or one of the school staff saying, "We're trying to present a more complete picture," with one of the parents who was on the textbook committee saying, "And that's what's got to stop."
Yeah, that was Pilar. That was the teacher. She was saying, "I'm just trying to showcase a full picture." And then Karen comes through there with like, "No."
Well, don't
full
do that.
Full picture. Uh-uh. Nope.
Every lesson.
Conceal information.
Absolutely. Every lesson should start and end with "America wins." That should be the only main byline we care about here. So we cut back to the jail after that, where Sam walks in and sees Pilar there looking to pick up her son. Sam offers to go get him for her since, you know, he knows, clearly he knows Pilar to some degree. He mentions that he knows what her son looks like. And he offers his condolences for Nando. However, this is clearly not the time. She just wants her son back. So Sam says, "Oh, sorry, I'll go grab him." And then walks over, grabs her son, and comes back. So actually before this as well. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I just said he releases him.
Yeah.
Because like, he knows that he probably didn't have any part in it, and he just hears what he's got to say. But then the other cops were like, "Oh, we don't have him."
Yeah.
Like, they were, like, saying, "No, like, he's not here," or, like, "I don't know who you're talking about."
Oh, yeah. They were probably just being completely unhelpful to a sweet Mexican family that had been arrested. Because you see it many times when they have scenes in the jail cell where it's white jailers treating other ethnic groups really poorly. There's a large recurring theme talking about how a lot of people who are going to prison are really just going there for free labor as part of, you know, the general prison complex that's been doing that, again, still to this very day, where they're still using slave labor.
They're literally
prisons.
Talking about building another prison in this movie. And like, people are like, "Why do we need another prison?
Law and order, baby. Let's scare them straight." But during that exchange, Sam mentions that they haven't talked, with Pilar cutting off saying, "We haven't talked since high school," with the implied line of, "Shut up, just go get my son, please. That is my main concern. You can hit on me later." So Sam goes, grabs Amato, brings him out to Pilar, and after they kind of like reconnect, Pilar starts leaving. He says, "It's good to see you again," which Pilar responds with absolutely nothing, and she cold shoulders him and walks out of the building.
Feels bad.
It does feel bad, but also Sam was not picking his moments. You got to size him up. You got to know when your openings are. And that was a shut door. Her son was in trouble.
Well, and also Sam was, how long had he been sheriff at this point? Only a couple months?
Not long at all. I think he'd been back 2 years.
Two years at that point.
But I don't know if he was sheriff for all of that.
I don't know if he'd been back that long, because I thought he was away, and then he came back because he was elected sheriff by the mayor because of his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because these two had known each other for a long time.
Long time. High school sweethearts, even.
Yeah, and they hadn't reconnected. So if it's been 2 years that he's been... I thought it was like maybe 2 years that he'd been gone or longer.
No, he mentions to Pilar later. She asks him how long he's been back in town, and he says 2 years.
Okay, well, that's the exact information that I was looking for. Yeah, thank you very much.
No worries. I didn't fall asleep during this movie,
I got those ones locked in. Yeah.
But after that absolutely astronomical cold shoulder, we get a quick montage of evidence gathering from Sam as he starts to piece together where the body parts were coming from, who it is. He doesn't quite figure out it's Charlie Waite. He gets told that.
He does, yeah, because it's like forensics go through and like basically just say like it's Charlie Waite.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a cool science scene.
Yeah.
After that, we go back to Pilar, who is teaching history about a number of various battles that had taken place in their area of Texas. In her class is Chet, who is drawing doodles in his book, making a pretty cool comic.
He's actually pretty good at that.
He's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Man's got a future. But he's not paying attention. He's doing his doodling. And as Pilar kind of wraps up the series of battles that have taken them to where they are, she asks Chet what he thinks about the lesson, trying to catch him unaware. Yeah. And he drops a brilliant line saying, "Now everyone's killing everyone else," which is quite accurate.
Yep.
Can't fault him
Very
on that
blanket
one.
Blanket statement. Yeah.
Yep. He really did catch the gist of the history lesson, I guess.
He didn't need the nuances. He was happy with Karen's approach to it, where it didn't need the details. Everyone was killing everyone else.
Exactly, which really shows you that when the parents got their way and they don't go into really the intricacies of why the battles were going on, it does just sound like everyone's killing everyone else. Mm-hmm. But you don't get the full picture. You don't know the oppressors. You don't know the people who are just fighting back, trying to maintain land. You don't know the powers moving in to upset them.
Yep. Which is actually interesting later. I say interesting. I was still bored by this. But like, because obviously he's not paying attention in class when he's talking about this stuff. But when he later goes and visits his grandpa, and he's got all this history and stuff on the wall about these African-American and Aboriginal...
The Seminole people.
Yeah. And like he's learning all this stuff that like he didn't know from school.
And it's going through the same history lesson that Pilar was doing, but from the viewpoint of the Seminole people and not just from the state perspective.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to get you saying, oh, I see where that came through. I now understand where the payoff of that scene came from. Because also later, when Chet's talking to his dad is upset about his marks when he defends a B average. Clearly, he's not trying that hard because you see him in classroom slacking off.
Yeah. Absolutely no effort, still a B average. Good for him.
Yeah. He's probably crushing art. Like, art class must be really carrying this man's GPA.
Yeah.
So earlier in the montage of evidence gathering, we see Sam talk to the coroner. It is confirmed that the body is Charlie Waite, brings up that that's his badge, and he has a Masonic ring. So when we come back to after that classroom scene with Chet, Sam is going to speak to Mayor Hollis once again. Hollis is out in a boat preparing to go fishing and gets caught playing hooky from important city business. But oh, that silly mayor, we don't care.
You just said out in a boat, and it kind of sounded like out in a boot. Like super Canadian out and about.
Oh, the mayor is ass out and about, eh?
Sorry,
fishing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Don't let me sound Canadian. Don't let me. Call me on
out
that every time.
In a boat, a water vehicle.
He was out in a dinghy.
Just sitting there too. It wasn't even like on the water. He was just like on the dock.
I think he was taking his time. I don't know. It's depreciating the slow parts of life. He's an old man.
He confessed to playing hooky, so he was clearly just avoiding his mayoral duties.
Yeah.
I liked what Sam said too here. He was like, oh, so I was wondering what mayors do when they're not, when they're not what? I forget what he says.
I don't remember. It was something like, something, oh, this is what mayors do.
Yeah.
Lazy piece of shit. That was the undertone.
Yeah.
So we start to speak to Hollis about the fact that the body they had discovered was Charlie Waite.
Yep.
Sam specifically asks Hollis about Wade's Masonic activity. Hollis gets a bit defensive when it turns out that the body belongs to Charlie Wade. Sam then kind of implicates Buddy in the murder because he knows how that story went that Hollis had told.
Yeah.
And when you kind of piece together the fact that Wade was murdered, it sounds like, you know, a little murdery on Buddy's mm-hmm. part. So Hollis gets further red and upset in the face by this accusation. There's a bit of tension. They talk about the dedication tomorrow for the courthouse in Buddy Deed's honor. And Hollis references the fact that Sam might want to implicate Buddy in the murder and that maybe there's something in it for him to make his dad look bad because Hollis is aware that him and his father never got along.
Yeah.
They were never buddy cops.
Oh my God. Just... Shut up.
No. Hollis's comment causes Sam to cut the conversation, quite flustered by the return that he'd be so biased in his investigation. But as Sam turns to leave, Hollis mentions, oh, look at all this gear I've got. And he speaks about how he has all this gear to go catch some fish that's just minding his own business at the bottom of the lake, and it hardly seems worth it, don't you think? Which is Hollis's way of kind of telling Sam, like, maybe this investigation's not worth looking at. Maybe you don't need to uncover what you're going digging for.
That was... pretty apparent.
It was apparent.
It was very blunt in its metaphorical ways.
They do this a couple times.
Yeah.
Which I don't think it was trying to be that hidden. I think it was clearly like, in other words, don't look into this.
Yeah, it was very much him saying like, it was like a warning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But obviously, what the fuck is he going to do?
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know what? That fish metaphor really caught me. I'm going to drop all of this right now. No, he doesn't because there's more movie to go.
Unfortunately. Sorry, this is more fun to shit on this movie now.
Oh, I love it.
It's not even that bad. But
no,
like,
because it's great.
But I'm just... Yeah, okay, keep going. Sorry.
So Sam goes to speak to Mrs. Bledsoe. Mrs. Bledsoe is the widow of the former owner of the bar that Otis now owns. I don't think they ever specifically name the bar. Or is it called Darktown?
I think it's Big O's.
Because they mention at least that part of town being called Darktown.
I think that's racist, though. I think that's meant to
It absolutely is. It's where the black community congregates.
Yeah.
It absolutely is racist.
But I think that might just be where what the white people call it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually called Darktown, but I remember seeing the bar, and at least under Otis, it was named Big O's. I don't know what it was named before. Yeah.
We'll get our old Big O's.
Yeah.
So before it was Big O's, it was owned by Mr. and Mrs. Bledsoe. So the widow is still alive. However, her husband no longer is. So Sam
naturally with being a widow.
Yeah, that kind of comes with the territory, I guess. Kind of mutually exclusive things.
Yeah.
So Sam goes to introduce himself to Mrs. Bledsoe, introducing himself as Sheriff Deeds, which she reminds him that he's not Sheriff Deeds, he's Sheriff Deeds Jr.
She gets a zinger in.
Yeah, she gets a zinger in. That's what her first words to him while she's playing a Game Boy too.
Yeah.
This is mad disrespect.
I liked this girl. She was cool. She was playing a Game Boy. She's like, you ever play these things? I mean, also, you know, reflecting back to modern day, everyone's obsessed with their phones and their video games, but it was cool. Like it was cool to see a Game Boy too.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
So when Sam starts to talk to her about that last night that Wade had been seen in Big O's, Mrs. Bledsoe informed Sam that Wade was squeezing money out of the businesses, and he'd been doing that to multiple businesses, especially ones ran by people of color. That was his way of kind of, you know, keeping them down. And because it was such a power imbalance, he could really take whatever he wanted from them, and there wasn't much they could do about that. They were constantly under the threat that he would close them down for minor crimes or things that aren't even really crimes, but he could just arrest them for, like selling whiskey in a club.
Yeah. Was it legal? I don't know.
I didn't understand. Apparently, it was one of those like things where if you're a club, you can't sell whiskey or something. It was some stupid thing about like alcohol laws.
He really flexed the rules a little bit. Yeah.
The main point was he was willing to bend the law to whatever served him the most.
At that moment, too. Like he would turn a blind eye if it was all going his way and he was getting his cut and everything was cool.
Exactly.
But as soon as it wasn't, then he was like, why are you selling whiskey?
Yep.
Huh?
Time to be actual sheriff and close this stuff down. But there's a scene here where Mrs. Bledsoe's kind of retelling of the story transitions to a scene of it actually playing out, where a young Big O, who is actually just named Otis, is serving Sheriff Wade. Otis is pretty new to working in the bar here and didn't know Charlie Wade or his deputy Hollis, who was with him as well.
Yeah.
So when Otis goes to bring their drinks over, Charlie Wade tries to big ball it and tries to get him to respect his really shitty authority. And when that doesn't go quite as planned, Otis didn't clean up a spill that Charlie Wade had made himself.
Yep.
Wade tells Otis that he had sent his daddy to the farm once and asks him why Otis thinks that was, which Otis cuts back saying that he needed him to pick cotton because it was, you know, a comment on the fact that a lot of people are going to prison under Wade's watch just for the slave labor.
Yeah.
Otis obviously doesn't like that retort and tells him it's actually because his dad had a big mouth. And now Otis is clearly, in Wade's opinion, running his back at him. So this leads to a confrontation where Wade just absolutely sucker punches Otis in the mouth, knocking him down. And as Otis grabs a chair to defend himself, Wade pulls out a gun on him, leaving Roderick Bledsoe to try and calm the situation down a bit.
Yeah.
Which also just infuriates Wade more because now there's two people questioning his authority. Mm-hmm. So at this point, Wade decides that no, they can no longer sell whiskey. He tells everyone to leave and just blasts a small glass of whiskey, almost hitting the person who was working behind the bar.
Yeah, the bartender
bar
was like
dropped.
Yeah, she like would have been hit if like
he
didn't if she didn't duck.
It was actually quite an impressive athletic achievement. She dropped in milliseconds. Yeah. No one has that kind of reaction time.
Can I say? I really liked how they did the transitions to flashbacks.
The transitions in and out were really cool.
And like flawless too. Like it was like when they do one takes in movies, like we saw in like Atonement, where it just like went onto the floor, floated around, and then suddenly you were back in time and like you were watching the other actors. And I really wonder how they did that, if there was editing or if they had everybody on set at the time.
I believe there was editing because some of the cuts or some of the like the transitions and the pans they're making didn't make geographic sense for the location. Like when they had the flashback to Buddy and his confrontation with Wade, when they pane back, the back wall of the building becomes just a barrier kind of halfway through. So it's not meant to make, couldn't have been one clean transition. And also during every pan, there's at least one or two frames where no characters are on screen.
That's a good point.
So I believe that, it was edited afterwards.
Really clean, though.
Really clean. Really clean.
That was one thing I really liked about this, the filmmaking part of this movie, was those transitions were
Those transitions are minty. Really good. They did have a lot of good shots of Texas in general, too.
Yeah, that was one part of this movie I didn't have a problem with.
Yeah. Cinematography definitely commonly on point. But after we go through this tale from Mrs. Bledsoe's position, we transition back out of the memory to find that it's actually been Otis who has providing the last bit of the story, because Sam is now in Big O's talking to Otis himself about what happened that night. Otis recounts that Wade had come in one more time after that confrontation to collect the monthly squeeze payments.
Yeah.
And after that, he had never seen Wade again. And when you listen to Otis introduce the people who came back one more time, he says, well, Otis came back with Hollis and Buddy. Oh, no, Buddy wasn't there. Because he's covering for Buddy, as we find out later in the story. So he almost drops it there and then catches himself before he reveals that Buddy was actually seen with Wade at his final, the final time he was seen in town.
You know, I knew this movie would benefit from another watch.
It really did.
Because I was thinking about it. But I really didn't care. And so I was like, it was there. Like our rental was still available. And so I was like, should I just watch it again? But I was like, why would I want to do that? I was bored.
There's so many little things in this because it creates such a cohesive, comprehensive story that is all really well mixed together. But you don't notice that until you go back and see all these little things that connect later in the movie.
I usually do a little bit of like a YouTube and Google scout after the movie to see what other people have said about it. Mm-hmm. And it was only after I watched it again, I was like, maybe this is deeper than I was giving it credit for. Like maybe I was just like tuned out in a way and I just was like bored because of the pace was like kind of not the funnest, the most fun. But like there is a lot of depth to it.
And it's a deep movie. Yeah. It is a really deep movie for that sense where like there is a whole story underneath and every character's part is well matched into that. So in the conversation between Otis and Sam, Sam starts to press a little bit about Otis's thoughts on his dad, Buddy Deeds.
Yeah.
And Otis kind of gives him the gears and tells him that Buddy was a good man, part of a different machine, kind of mentioned that Buddy's generation of sheriffs was a bit more politically motivated. There was a bit more back scratching in the way that if you back me, I'll help out your business. Yeah. Otis had mentioned that because he was generous and helpful to Buddy, he dissuaded any other black bars from opening,
mm-hmm.
so that Otis kind of kept running the only spot in that town for that community.
Yeah.
Further to that, Otis mentions that there wasn't anyone in this town who would speak poorly of Buddy, and furthermore, you couldn't make him. So the next scene, we see a group of people walking towards the courthouse that's about to be memorialized to yeah. Buddy Deeds. There's a bit of an argument breaking out as Danny, who is one of the parents from the teachers meeting who had been arguing to have more inclusion of the Mexican perspective of the Alamo,
yep.
is trying to catch up to two of the prominent figures in the city. They were two of the people who had backed Sam Deeds' run for sheriff and were kind of on the forefront of pushing for the new prison that gets introduced shortly later.
Right.
And generally, since they were so pro Buddy Deeds, Danny was kind of chasing up to him and arguing that Buddy Deeds wasn't all that he seemed. In fact, he had forced people out of particular areas in town and then bought the land for himself.
Yeah.
So you can see that Buddy Deeds had actually done some things that were not good deeds.
I was waiting for your first deeds pun.
In getting the city deeds. Do your part. And when Danny even kind of pulls over Sam, who is also kind of catching up to the group, he says, you know, Sam, I got nothing against you. There's just more to Buddy's story than is being told. And Sam agrees with him and says yeah. that he's on the same page as that.
Yeah.
So we cut back to Delmore, who is now moving into his house with his family. We see a bunch of boxes getting moved around. And he's kind of arguing with his wife, with the argument being the fact that they kind of have to talk to Otis at some point.
Yeah.
With Otis being revealed to be Delmore's father, who had abandoned him at an early age and had only moved several houses away with a new woman from when they were growing up, which is cold.
Yeah.
Also in this scene, you see Chet trying to desperately get Delmore's attention while he argues with his wife, trying to bring up the fact that he wants to join the track team, but because Delmore's not impressed with his average, he tells him that's not happening
yeah.
and kind of cuts him off there. And that scene kind of closes with Otis saying that he, or with Delmore saying that he's not going to go speak to Otis and that he can't avoid him for the entire time that they're down here.
Which makes you really think that he hates
this guy. He really hates Otis, which I mean, you, when you abandon your kid, you can't expect them to like you afterwards. We cut over to a prominent businesswoman's Mercedes Cruz restaurant. It turns out that Pilar is her daughter. And Pilar is talking to Mercedes about love, remarrying. Mercedes says that she was too busy to ever remarry after her husband had been murdered previously.
Yep.
Pilar brings up that Mercedes had never approved of any of the boys that she had brought home, with Mercedes curtly turning to her and specifying it was really just that boy she didn't approve of. She then exits this conversation by turning around and accusing everyone who works for her of stealing from her, and then storms out, which is kind of a power move. I don't know how you, I don't know how you bring that one back. That's a period on that sentence.
Yeah.
Sam then heads to a bar where he's talking to one of the bartenders who claims to be as liberal as the next guy, which Sam cuts back if the next guy is a redneck, which is a pretty good line.
That's
actually.
A good line.
That's
I like
clever.
That one,
that's
yeah.
witty. But what this bartender spends the next minute talking about is you need to keep your lines of demarcation between right and wrong. And then he spouts off general nonsense about what is currently known as the white replacement theory. In the movie, they don't really get into it, but he talks about how he believes that the white race is getting pushed out by people, other races having more, you know, moving into the area.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a horrifically racist take. This is not what's yeah. happening at all.
It's funny how he's complaining about other races moving into the area when white people are not even native to this area.
Exactly. And bringing it back to the white replacement theory, which is an absolute like white supremacist talking point that does not reflect the real world at all. It's funny that he introduces himself as liberal as the next guy and then goes hardcore into immediate white supremacy talk.
So funny.
Yeah, that's really something. But Sam kind of puts him in his place a bit. And I guess the bartender kind of cuts back and is talking about a mixed race couple that is sitting behind them and says that, you know, his dad wouldn't be the kind to really break them up, but he'd give them some safety tips, which is also horrific and not a good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, not a good look for Buddy.
No,
yeah.
because that's still even I think that kind of goes back to Otis saying he's like a next generation of sheriff. where, yeah, he's not arresting them for being an interracial couple. But what the hell, buddy? That's yeah. not right. That's yeah. not good.
That, like, what would he do? Like, walk up to them and be like, you guys are going to have to watch out.
Yes.
Somebody, it's not going to be me.
Not going to be me.
But somebody might arrest you.
Yeah. And also, buddy, do you think they don't know that? Yeah. Do you think they're unaware that what they're doing is maybe not accepted by the people around them and is yeah. leading them to live a harder life? We cut back to Mercedes' restaurant, where as she's getting into her cars, one of her employees, Enrique, is kind of talking to her in Spanish, and Mercedes curtly informs him that he should be speaking in English in this United States of America, god damn it. And then she says goodbye to him and drives away, which is funny because I swear there are two times in this entire movie where someone exits a conversation by saying goodbye. It always is just someone walking away. It's never someone being like, hey, gotta go. It's always just awkward silence, leave. But that's not important.
I didn't notice that, but
yeah, it just got to me after a while. I'm like, someone say bye. Someone give an exit to this conversation. You can't just leave.
It's like watching The Room when they don't close the door.
Yeah.
It's like, just close the door.
Just say bye when you walk away. It doesn't need to be this dramatic. So after this scene, Delmar goes to visit Otis at Otis's bar. He makes it clear right away he is not there to talk about father-son business, and it is all official army business because of the shooting that had happened there a couple nights previously.
Yep.
And Delmar is kind of giving Otis the gears, telling him that he might bar his men from coming there because it's such a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a bit of a conversation here. Otis mentions that he had heard that, you know, there's a new colonel in town who's just really running a tight ship on these guys. Delmar says back that he's heard about Otis as well, that he's the mayor of Darktown, which is why I think like the black community also refers to it as that. So
yeah.
There's, I think, some familiarity with the term that they're kind of taking it back a bit from the people who might have called it that previously.
Mm-hmm.
Not super important, but Otis does talk about, you know, there can be good or bad people there are no purely good or purely bad people. Everyone's a little bit of both. And the only two places where the black community really feels safe in this town are his bar and a church that's close by as well. But there's no demarcation between people who go to either place. Both are welcome anywhere they need to go because it's more about protecting the community than the separation between, you know, people who drink and people who go to church.
Yeah.
Which is kind of one of the themes, I guess, about, you know, people being people everywhere and not needing to be in one particular side of a particular border, aka Texas border, to be good or bad. So then after that, Otis tries to kind of talk about when he can meet Delmar's family, with Delmar turning back and saying, why would you even want to meet my family?
Yeah.
Which is cold. And then Otis says, of course, well, you know, I'm your father. And then Delmar again slips back into colonel mode and then says that he will let him know his official decision later.
Yeah.
And walks out the door.
This was such a cold line.
It
where he's
is.
Like, you will get official notification when I've made my decision.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh. Yikes.
Hit him with it.
Yeah.
You're the father now. You know what? Otis became your son with that line. You are his dad, and you've put him on timeout.
You know, it's funny you say that. This is a fun fact, but I'm gonna get into this real quick.
All right. I like it.
Joe Morton, who is Del, or Colonel Payne, plays Ron Canada, Otis's son, despite being 18 months older than him.
That's really good. That's kind of weird.
It is weird. But did you notice he looked kind of old?
And also, Otis looked kind of young yeah. to be a grandfather.
Like, they grayed his hair.
Yeah,
but
he,
like,
grayed,
he had
hair,
great
hair.
Fucking skin.
He had amazing skin. It was kind of weird looking at him because he looked so young and spry
yeah.
for being a grandfather of someone who's in, like, middle school.
Yeah, it was funny.
That's funny. I didn't know about that age difference, but I knew that clearly Otis wasn't that old.
Oh,
or whoever
yeah,
the
no.
actor was clearly wasn't that old.
Yeah, that's funny. I had to get that in there because it was relevant, even though I really struggled to find fun facts for this movie.
Oh,
I'll just give you a little warning. All right, keep going.
So after that little slapping around, we cut back to Sam, who's now walking down to the commemoration at the courthouse. Once they get down to the commemoration, you kind of cut in on Hollis saying some nice words about Buddy Deeds. He calls Sam to say some words as well, and Sam actually gives a really good speech here. He kind of just puts aside the fact that he's investigating his own father for murder and,
yeah,
you know,
and
doesn't have any respect
dad
for him.
Was like such a dick to him for
yeah.
his life. Yeah.
So he kind of puts that on ice and says some nice things about the commemoration. And they have Mercedes, who is the business owner, cut the ribbon. Sam goes to say something like,
I just remember what it was.
What
sorry,
what was?
Going back, when he's on the boat, when the mayor's on the boat.
Yeah.
Sam says, I always wondered what mayors do when they're not cutting ribbons.
Oh, that's what he says. That's what it was.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I just had to interject.
Okay. I'm so glad that that clicked in because of that. I had no idea where you were going with that for a quick second. No, I'm glad. That's funny.
So Mercedes cuts the ribbon.
Yeah, Mercedes cuts the ribbon. Sam goes to talk to her afterwards, and as cold as Pilar's shoulder was at the police station, this shoulder is 10,000 times colder.
Ice fucking cold.
This is a 360 spinorama and then turn to leave. This is the Tony Hawk of cold shouldering people. This was painful to watch. So she walks away. She has nothing to do with poor Sam. So Sam goes for a nice walk with Pilar.
Mm-hmm.
They do a little reminiscing, talking about different things. Sam mentions that this wasn't really the job that he had intended when he came back to be sheriff, but he just kind of came back because he knew he had backers and he didn't want to work for his old father-in-law anymore when he left his wife.
Yeah.
Then they start talking and kind of referencing how they had a history together. Pilar mentions that it was kind of weird this one time she saw Buddy watching her playing in the playground and thought that maybe he was going to arrest her and just got weird vibes from Buddy looking at her. And there was a mention of the relationship from before they were dating, which is kind of introduces that these two actually have a pretty big back history. It does one of those cool transitions to them as a kid in the same spot, kind of talking about love and things and how they know that their relationship would be illegal at the time. And that's kind of Pilar brings up that it would be illegal. And then Sam, young Sam, asks her if that would really stop her. And then we transition back to the current time with current Sam saying, no, it wouldn't. But Pilar had walked away at that point because she got uncomfortable talking about their history.
Yeah, she seemed eager to get out of there. She was like, it'd be weird if the teacher was late to class. And I was like, you just want to get out.
You don't want to be there. You had plenty of time. It's probably still lunch.
Yeah.
So we go to another good detective montage where Sam starts putting together a timeline of Charlie Wade and all the bad things he had done and where Buddy fits into that. At the end of that montage, Sam's kind of shooting the shit with a janitor who had some run-ins with Buddy. They're kind of playfully talking about how he's growing an entire acre of marijuana for personal usage. Janitor reveals that, well, it's, you know, to help his stomach, and the stomach's bad because he's also on stills. The janitor reminds Sam that Buddy did good by people, and for the third or fourth time in this movie, you hear that his mother was a saint. When Sam mentions the previous sheriff having been tougher on Mexicans, the janitor cuts the fun, kind of jokey act and tells him that Wade had murdered Eladio Cruz and mentions that his friend Chucho Montoya had witnessed it.
Yeah, and this is Mercedes' husband and Pilar's dad.
Exactly, yeah.
So Charlie Wade killed Pilar's dad.
Mm-hmm. Although, at this point, Sam doesn't know that Eladio is her father.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a part of the reveal later. We don't know this yet either, actually.
Yeah.
We don't know the relationship between Cruz and Eladio and Pilar yet.
Okay.
But because he knows that there's a connection between Wade and Eladio Cruz, Sam goes to talk to Chucho Montoya, who has moved back to Mexico. We'll kind of briefly go over some of the next plot points. A lot of this is just kind of like integral to the message of the movie, but like, I guess the...
Yeah, not necessarily the through line of the
not, yeah,
the
not
mystery,
the through line of the action. But Sam goes to talk to Chucho, who gives another transition back in history to Eladio Cruz being murdered by Sheriff Wade. He had been helping some people across the border under the guise of selling watermelons. And when he gets pulled over, well, not pulled over, he's a flat tire. Well, he pulled himself over.
Yeah.
Because of the flat tire. But he gets stopped by Sheriff Wade, who knows exactly what operation he's running, and murders him for not cutting him into this operation.
Yeah, that was interesting because Charlie Wade is not killing them because they're smuggling people in.
No.
He's killing them because they aren't involving him in the costs, or like cutting him into the costs of smuggling him
in. Yeah, exactly.
Or like paying him, basically.
Because I'm assuming that Eladio's not doing this for money. You see many times throughout the movie that he's helped people into the country.
Yeah.
He's kind of doing it because he wants to help people live a better life. Yeah. And Wade wants to get cut in so he can make some money because he knows that he can stop this operation at any time and can now just extort them for it.
Yep.
But instead, he kills Eladio Cruz in cold blood. He makes him grab a gun in his car so that I guess he can have some kind of defense. I don't know why you even need that. You can do whatever you want. He's dead. There's no body cameras on you.
I think this is, he's trying to, I guess, maybe morally do it.
Yeah.
He's in front of Hollis still.
Yeah.
And so he wants to claim it was self-defense because he had an armed weapon or, you know, just stupid bullshit.
It's something dumb like that.
Yeah.
Maybe in case someone investigated, they'd see his blood on his gun or something
because
like
he
that.
Does this again later.
Yeah.
So it's not something that he he's
it's calculated.
It's practice for him. Yeah. Like he says it.
Exactly. But during the conversation with Chucho, they also talk about stepping over the line. And since that Sam is now in Mexico, he's no longer some hotshot sheriff. And that borders are kind of pointless. And you can be a good person or a bad person on either side.
Yep.
Which again kind of plays back into the morals of the movie. After this scene where we kind of learn a bit more about Eladio Cruz's fate, we see that Sam drives over to pick up Pilar. And they're going on a little datesy.
Mm-hmm.
They go back to Mercedes' restaurant after it had closed, just the two of them. They kind of talk about their history. They do a little dancing. They mention that the music hasn't changed since she was 10. And then they have some bumping steamy sex. And there's one thing that I'd like.
They do the deed.
Oh, I missed that one. Nicely done, Kyle. But after this scene, you might have noticed that they're out of breath for a very long time. This was an absolute cardio thriller, so I timed it. They were out of breath for the next minute and a half, where they didn't really say much. They just went, so these guys were hitting a marathon session.
Oh my God.
It seemed weird that they were so out of breath for so long because it interrupted the dialogue and didn't feel natural. They weren't doing a great job of pretending to be out of breath. So
Jason out here making a commentary on somebody's fitness level for sex. Can you believe these guys were out of breath for a minute and a half?
The sex shouldn't even last that long. But yeah, so at this point, they start talking after their mind-blowing sex marathon session. And this is when Pilar reveals that her father was Eladio Cruz.
Yeah.
Which Buddy knows that he had died too young to have possibly been her father. So there's something more to this picture.
Yeah.
We cut back to Chet speaking with Otis. He'd kind of gone back into Otis's bar through the back door, which, a little detail, Otis had mentioned that the last owner used to have a gun, like a shotgun they'd have on display just to show people he had one, but Otis got rid of the gun. The gun's just in the back room. He never actually got rid of it.
Oh.
It's not important for anything, but it's just sitting there on display.
I mean, yeah, it is important that he got rid of it, though.
Yeah, because it's no longer in the front where a particular sheriff could particularly ask him to pick up a particular gun and particularly get shot a lot of times in the back.
Yep.
But Chet comes to speak to Otis, and Otis kind of tells him about the history of the Seminole people. We cut back to Sam speaking to Hollis again. Sam is now loaded with a bit more information about the history of Charlie Wade and Buddy. He runs Hollis past this now pretty set theory that Buddy had killed him. Hollis curtly says back that Sam lived with him 17 or 18 years, and he didn't get to know him any better than that, clearly dismissing the theory that Buddy killed him.
Yeah.
Sam leaves saying that, if your memory gets any better, to call me. Boom. You're old. I guess get dunked on, old man. After that, Sam goes to speak to a man from San Antonio, with the only really important detail coming from this was that he was aware that Sam's father, Buddy, had another woman on the side.
Yeah.
And that maybe there wasn't as much of a perfect couple as people have been telling him that his saintly mother and his father were. This is another time where they kind of have another metaphor for digging around kind of gets you bad things, because the man he had spoken to scared a snake when he was checking out a basket and had to kill the snake. He says, be careful where you go looking. Who knows what you'll find? But he already found out that his dad was cheating on his mom.
Yep.
So he kind of already found that snake. After that, Delmore goes to visit Otis in his home. He doesn't actually catch Otis as he's talking to some other businessmen, but he speaks to Carolyn and they kind of talk about Otis and how he had so many other women he married before this current wife after fathering Delmore, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But they find that Otis this whole time had kept like a little shrine to Delmore, saving anytime he had like an important promotion or was generally newsworthy, he would save that and put that on display. Carolyn even mentions that Otis had made her memorize the whole damn army chain of command before he would marry her. Yeah. So clearly he does still love his son.
Yeah, and he's been asking his brother?
His former brother-in-law, but Delmore's mom's brother.
Yeah.
Delmore's uncle.
Because
about him.
Yeah, Del says, like, my mom said he never asked about me. It's revealed that, like, he never asked Del's mom, but he was still asking about how Del was doing.
Yeah.
Just in kind of a roundabout
way. Just a
way.
Different way. He was never asking her about Delmore.
Mm-hmm.
He was asking his uncle. After that, Delmore can't, you know, he's kind of dealing with a lot of emotion, so he actually leaves before he speaks to Otis. And we now get a scene of Enrique, who is the employee talking to Mercedes outside of her store. He's back in Mexico, and he is helping a group of people illegally cross the border to immigrate into the States. During the river crossing, one woman breaks her leg, and the only person he has left to turn to is Mercedes Cruz, Yep. Which is not the person you want to turn to, because earlier in the movie, she called the Border Patrol on some people walking across her land.
Yeah. Well, I guess she lives near the border.
Yeah.
I think because of what happened to her husband,
mm-hmm.
who was helping people cross the border, she's now completely against it. And you see that in the way that she's wanting to speak English, too.
Yeah.
Because she just wants to completely blend in, just basically to stay alive, probably.
Yeah, I think she's trying to not be discovered that she, which is also revealed in like, whatever, 5 minutes from now,
yeah.
that she had also illegally crossed the border in the same fashion, and she had made a very successful life for herself here.
Yeah.
So I guess she doesn't want to risk that. And as a result of that, she kind of turns her back on helping other people across the border, which, I mean, whatever, it's not her responsibility to do that, but yeah. she's actively stopping people from do that, which is, you know, a little hypocritical at the very least, because this is how she yeah. came to find success here.
Exactly. But then he comes asking for help.
Exactly. Yeah, he brings the woman who he reveals to be his fiance. Mercedes asks him, like, but aren't you married? And he says, well, he married his cousin's friend to help her into the country, and she replies, ugh, typical.
Yeah, because he wanted a green card.
Well, he wanted to help someone else get a green card. He was already here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he was helping. Okay.
Yeah, because he's actually a pretty good guy. This is the modern day, the next generation Eladio Cruz, which is kind of what convinces her to help out these people and his fiance, because of the resemblance there to what Enrique's doing to what her former husband had done. At that, kind of as they drive away, Mercedes is going to call in a favor with a doctor friend that she has to help him out. We cut back to Sam walking into Big O's place for the last time. He's going to speak to Hollis and Otis because he'd kind of pieced together what had happened.
Hollis and Otis. Hall and Oates.
As soon as you said that, God damn. Oh, man. He went to go speak to Hall and Oates.
I wonder if Sam's kiss is on his list.
I don't know any Hall and Oates. Yeah. If you're making a Hall and Oates reference, it's Hall and Oates. Okay. The audience is going to love that, though. That's going to zing. He goes in and starts to tell him about his theory. He knows that Buddy had actually taken the $10,000 as seed money for the widow of Eladio Cruz, who we found out to be Mercedes Cruz,
yep.
and that she was the other woman that Buddy had seen. And at this point, Hollis gives him the full story of what actually happened that mm-hmm. night. Otis also kind of contributes, saying that what really went down was Otis was running an illegal gambling business out of the back of his, soon to be his place, but he hadn't cut Sheriff Wade in. So when Sheriff Wade came in early one day to collect his squeeze money, this was the night of the confrontation between Buddy and Wade.
Yep.
He came back to get his money early, found Otis was running this organization, stomped the shit out of Otis, and then made him fetch the money while this is going on. He motions to the back where the gun was being put on display and wants Otis to pick it up as he levels his gun at him.
Yep.
But before he has a chance to shoot this man in the back, Buddy kicks down the door, yells, Wade! And then Hollis shoots him.
Yeah.
It was Hollis the whole time.
It was Hollis the whole time.
Aw, who would have thought? That's why Hollis was so gung-ho about mm-hmm. defending Buddy's honor.
Say because it was him. So.
Yeah.
That's another Hollis song.
Keep them coming. I don't know. Please drop instructions afterwards labeling what it was, though, because I won't know.
Okay.
So after that murder had occurred, well, not really a murder, it was self-defense, the three of them who were still there, Buddy, Otis, and Hollis, come together and decide that they're going to protect each other, because the county judge that had kind of been using Charlie as his whip hand, also benefiting from the illegal and awful things that Charlie had been doing, would surely give Hollis an absolute reaming out for his murder. So they cook up the story about how Wade had taken the money and left, when really the money went to someone else. Sam agrees that he's going to leave it an unsolved mystery. Mm-hmm. He says, Buddy's a goddamn legend. He can handle it. In reference to the fact that everyone's going to think that Buddy also killed him.
Yep.
But with the commemoration and everything, it doesn't really matter.
Guess they're keeping it out of touch and out of mind. Sam's done with his private eyes.
Yeah. Go for three. Comedy trio, please.
No, I'm going to get it later. Don't worry. I'll get it later.
We'll come back.
Yeah.
Okay. After that, we have a quick scene where Sam is back at the old movie theater with Pilar. Years previous, Buddy had found them there when they were just young kids and broken them up because he found out that they were dating, was super upset about that.
Yeah.
But now that they're older and back there, Sam reveals that Buddy is both of their dad, because Buddy's side piece was Mercedes Cruz. They had been dating after Eladio had been murdered, and Buddy had fathered Pilar. So this is quite distressing for Pilar. Sam doesn't have an actual character in this movie, so he's just kind of stoic the whole time.
Yep.
But Pilar actually has a good performance beside him working through this. She reveals that she can't have kids anymore I guess to try and make this feel okay that they're, you know, half siblings and also getting
they're
it
gonna
on.
Get it on.
And Sam tells her, if I met you for the first time today, I'd still want to be with you. And they're just still together. This doesn't slow them down at all. And the last line of the movie is Pilar looking at him and says, forget the Alamo.
I guess that's the method of modern love.
There we go. You were cooking. You were just sitting on that one.
They're back together again.
Who knew?
Oh, here's another one. So he says that if they met again, what does he say?
Let me drop this.
Okay.
If I met you for the first time today, I'd still want to be with you.
Guess some things are better left unsaid. That's another Hollywood song.
No, he very much needed to say that. She thought he was going to leave her.
Look, it's incest and it's uncanny.
Okay, I'm cutting you off. Yeah. That's the end of the movie.
Okay.
Oh, this was a long plot summary.
Yeah, it's a laugh.
Give me your fucking phone.
Sarah smile.
Goddamn menace. Just flipping through the Spotify top singles. Unbelievable. I really wanted to go in depth.
This is a long movie. There is a lot you have to mention.
You know what? This is the longest movie yet. This will be the longest episode yet.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that's fine.
It's fine.
Because there's a lot going on in the movie. There's a lot that's done really well. A lot shown through like the different generations.
Yeah.
Showing the similarities between Eladio Cruz and Enrique, who's kind of taking on that role of helping people find a better life across the border. Dealing with the three generations of the Payne family, from Otis to Delmar to Chet.
Generational Payne.
You're on a roll today. Damn. Oh, I'm glad that on a movie you don't like, you're just sitting there, you're just cooking up the jokes. Oh, God. At least you're bringing something here.
Yeah. I mean, I did like parts of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I when I sit back and look at it, like, part of me thinks that I like it because of the depth and some of the resolve that it has. And it's one of those movies that I know if you watch it again, you will pick up on different things.
Yeah.
Like how they covered it up and why Buddy and Mercedes were so keen on keeping those two apart, mm-hmm. because they were brother and sister.
It actually feels like a really good mystery movie,
yeah.
where you don't need to, you kind of figure it out on your own as you go through. As you pick up clues the same time that Sam does, you kind of know why he's doing the next thing because you're following where the trail's at right now. You don't need to figure out the end point because you kind of can't. There's no way to know that Hollis shot him.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand how Sam has gotten to the point. And even when Sam shows up, he still thinks Buddy killed him. So he had to be taught the actual story as he's uncovered pieces about his past, how that's affected where he is now. And there's all these parallels to like both the historical political environment in Texas around borders, people's own autonomy, when Chucho is talking about how animals don't care about the line and how when you step across anywhere, you don't have to be a good or bad person. All comes back and it's tied into other ways. Like, I really like this movie because I think it carries out this commentary so well and is able to deal with a whole wide grasp of like talking about the social problems that are really endemic to a long stretch of time, not just that period, because we still see so much of that today.
It is interesting like that because it's talking about generations of this sort of behavior.
Yeah.
And then even 25 years later, when you're watching this movie, you still see the same sort of things happening in those areas and with, interracial conflict. But like, what did you think of the reveals? Like, first of all, that it was Hollis that did it. And then secondly, incest.
The incest one's weird. It's always very weird. It's always weird when movies bring that in.
It is. There is one other movie that I can think of, but actually there's only one movie that I can think of that does an incest reveal well. If you haven't seen all of Denis Villeneuve's movies, go watch them because they're fucking amazing. But it hit a little bit harder and a bit better than this, because in this, they realize that it's incest and they're like, meh.
Yeah, I can't have kids.
That's cool. I can't have kids.
Yeah. I don't know, like, there should have been some weight to that. It should have resulted in them not being able to be together, because I think that would have mattered more than them just being like, oh my God, this massive reveal about my life, this uncovering of truth about myself,
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Makes me reflect back on why they were keeping me apart all this time.
Like, yeah.
I can reflect a little bit. Maybe they weren't as awful as I thought they were. They were just, it was just because of this forbidden love.
Yeah.
But no, they're like, I actually still want that exhaustive dick.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to be left breathless for a minute and a half. And so I don't care if you're technically my half brother. I can't have kids. Keep doing me.
Yeah. That was a weird, because it just didn't have the impact it should have. And I kind of felt weird about how they were still together afterwards.
At this point in the movie, I was like laying down because I was just kind of over it. Like the Hollis reveal was like, yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense. You know, I kind of had a feeling it wasn't Buddy, because at this point, if it was Buddy, it would be disappointing because it's so apparent. It would just be like all this mystery just reveal that it was him all along. But when they were like, we're brother and sister, I was like, what the fuck? And I like sat up and I was like, wait, what the fuck is just happening?
And it just didn't really matter to them. Which
no.
Especially at the end of the movie, just have that be emotional thing where, you know, Pilar's leaving crying and Sam is left with nothing again.
Yeah.
Because that would be a really powerful end. It doesn't have to be happy.
Yeah.
We don't care about them finding love. We want to see an actual like logical conclusion from the story to this point.
I was looking through Letterboxd and I didn't save this review, but somebody said this movie's kind of like Star Wars if you think about it. And I was like, I mean, in that one particular way, kind of, but like.
But do they keep dating afterwards?
No.
No.
So yeah, that was a weird point. But overall, I found this movie very boring, but definitely thoughtful.
It's a very thoughtful movie. And I really enjoyed how they demonstrated these things through the dynamics of the relationships. I thought they told the story very well.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was a very good story. The acting was fine.
Yeah.
There was no real amazing performances, I don't think. I think Pilar had the best performance.
I would say that Kris Kristofferson as Charlie Wade.
He did do really good, but like, I don't think that's the hardest thing to sell. A guy who sucks, you hate.
True. That's good.
Yeah, he did good.
He had one mode, and it was, I'm awful.
Yeah, like he only had that one dimension, so I don't think it's like an amazing performance really showed more than that, but it was good. He did exactly what he needed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So you liked the Hollis reveal. Did you feel that was like accurately built up to?
It was fine.
Yeah?
Like, there was only so many people it could be at that point, and it made sense why he was covering it up this whole time, because it was him.
Yeah.
But like, even at that point, it kind of felt like Hollis knew... So, like, that maybe Sam wasn't going to be that upset about it? I don't know.
I think he just did it to defend Buddy's honor, because he got to the point where Sam was so chomping at the bit, he's calling it, this is who did it, that he had to reveal who it actually was.
Yeah, that's fair. There's one thing you didn't mention in your breakdown.
There's a number of things. Really good, deep
but
movie.
But that random appearance of Frances McDormand. Which, when I was talking to you before this podcast, you didn't even realize it was her.
I didn't realize. She's so good. She's a chameleon.
Yeah,
Frances McDormand is Sam's ex-wife.
Bunny, yeah.
Bunny, who's a massive football fan. And,
yeah.
You know,
completely
she's
manic. Just
yeah.
Like...
She's on so many uppers.
Yeah.
Holy, she is just filled with all the feel-goods.
Yeah. Frances McDormand does really good. This is the third time we've seen her this year, and like...
3 out of 7 have
this
been...
This has to be it, though. Like, she can't be in more movies than this.
She can't keep dropping amazing performances, award-winning performances on us like that.
I mean, granted, like, Fargo, she had a larger role.
Yeah.
And the other two was pretty small.
This is literally one scene.
Yeah.
And not even that important of a scene, which is why I did not make my summary.
Exactly, yeah. Because he goes to go grab his dad's old stuff, basically.
Yeah.
And she's just there doing her manic shtick about... being crazy about somebody playing football and these kids that can run real good and push stuff real far.
Yeah. It wasn't super important. But there's so many like interesting things that I left out. Like there's a conversation between Cliff and Mikey when Mikey finds the .45 caliber bullet that proves that Buddy had killed him, because they mentioned earlier that, you know, Buddy's gun was a .45. And in that conversation, they're talking about how Cliff wants to marry Priscilla. And her family, because Mikey asks if her family thinks that would be weird. And Cliff's like, well, because they think she's gay, if she's not married to a man, they don't care that I'm white. And then Mikey says like, oh, you love to see like a deep-seated prejudice upset by another deep-seated prejudice. because like it just, I don't know, it's a cool commentary on that about how shitty that situation is, that there's these clear divides across like racial lines that are also just taking the place of divides across sexuality lines, and that people are really looked down upon for so many different things. And it's just, it's like, I like, there's so many small details that keep coming back together. Yeah. It's a good movie, Kyle.
It's, I think it's definitely worth a rewatch.
Oh yeah. I'm so glad I watched it again.
It, part of me doesn't want to watch it back right away, but I also think that if I don't watch it again in relatively short order, I'm going to forget everything.
You need to soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, should a movie need two viewings to be fully understood?
Here's the thing. It doesn't need to. I enjoyed it on the first viewing, and then I liked everything, like all the small little bits I found in the second viewing just enriched it, but I liked it without the second viewing anyways.
I'll probably like it more the second time I watch it.
I bet you you will, but you'll definitely be done with it afterwards. Yeah. You're not going to unlock anything on a third viewing. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I did the second one. But I also really liked it the first time around, so it's a different scenario.
Yeah, it is a different scenario because I couldn't be asked. And my brain was telling me to rewatch it. I was like, it knew. It was like, do it. Watch it again. Because I was reading all this stuff. I was like, maybe I missed that. But, whatever.
Yeah.
You want to get into reviews?
Maybe a little wrap-up afterwards?
Let's do
part three here.
All right, well, you liked it.
Yeah, I did.
So what do you think the critics thought of it, though?
Well, I know it didn't do great. I knew it was more of like a small film in terms of reception afterwards. So I'm going to say the critics gave it a 78, and the fans are going to give it like a 72.
Okay. Was actually really well reviewed.
Oh.
It has a 94% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well deserved. I've always thought critics are really good at knowing what movies are good, and I've always appreciated their opinion.
And it has an 83% from audiences.
Audiences, you're okay too.
It has a 7.4 on IMDb and a 78 on Metacritic.
Look, this is your favorite movie's favorite movie. This is a real movie's movie.
Yeah. Box office, do you think it did well?
It couldn't have.
No.
There's no way.
It made money.
That's good.
On a budget of $3 million, it made $13 million.
Not a lot of money, but it made a lot of money.
But this is independent cinema.
Yeah.
This is not going to be like big studio investment. This was $3 million, less than Bottle Rocket. I feel like I need to mention that every time.
Every time we talk about a movie budget.
Because, this is $2 million less than Bottle Rocket, which had unknowns, except for James Caan. This movie had Chris Cooper, Chris Christopherson, Matthew McConaughey, Frances McDormand, all these fucking people, and it was $3 million. Where the fuck did the budget go for Bottle Rocket? I'm just getting angry about it.
I think that there's the difference of where did they spend the money in Bottle Rocket, and how do they only spend that much for this one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in some cases, people like the director and they want to be in their movies.
That's true. And I think that might have been what this is because he has a bit of like a cult following in a way.
And if you look at it in this way, Matthew McConaughey also wasn't the biggest star at this point.
This had to have been pretty early in his career.
He had made his debut only 3 years earlier in Richard Linklater's Fuck.
I don't think that's the title.
No, it's not.
I don't think that's correct, Kyle.
Damn it.
I don't
What's
know.
What's it either. Called?
Hey, Bixby. What was Matthew McConaughey's debut film?
Dazed and Confused. Dazed and Confused. That's what it's called.
Oh, I should have known that. I knew that. Yeah. Damn it. Oh, that makes
there
me feel
it is.
Bad.
Yeah. And so, like, that was only 3 years before this. And, like, he doesn't have a big part.
No.
But you would think that, like, because of his, he has pretty good command in this scene. Like, he's
just talented.
In his, like, very small scenes.
Very small role.
I'm actually kind of angry with how they put him on the poster so prominently. Because he is not in this movie.
No, he's in a couple flashbacks and that's it.
Yeah, warning for anybody who wants to watch this movie based on if they enjoy Matthew McConaughey. He's in it for like maybe 5 minutes.
He's good for those
five minutes. He's good 5 minutes. He probably has as much screen time as Frances McDormand does, and she's in one scene.
Yeah. They talk about him way more than he's ever like actually doing anything.
Yeah, which I kind of wished that maybe they had done more of those flashbacks where you see him. But it might have been overdone.
I don't think they would have needed
it. I just wanted to see more McConaughey, especially in that outfit. Like, he was looking good.
He was looking tight.
That $13 million at the box office landed it at 114th place on the 1996 worldwide box office.
Yeah, that's forgettable.
Yeah. I had to go to the second page for
you
that.
You shouldn't have to click.
Yeah. All right. But let's get into our rankings then. So, Jason, on the snubs and dubs scale of enjoyment, craft, execution, and rewatchability, what was your enjoyment?
Thought long and hard on this one. 4.
Wow.
I really enjoyed this movie. I really liked what it was putting together, the themes it was talking about, the way they told the stories through, I thought, really good relationships that dealt with a lot, that had a lot of depth to it. I thought, okay, this is just enjoyment, so I'm not going to go down further. I had a great time watching it. I had an even better time the second time watching it. So, 4.
Okay.
What about you?
I put my scores in the other night when I watched it. And my enjoyment was a 1.5 at that time.
Oh, my God.
I think I'm actually going to boost it to a 2, though. I think my enjoyment wasn't strong, as I've maybe alluded to this episode. I didn't really have a great time watching it. Having a better time talking about it, and not just because it's fun to like talk about a movie that I didn't really like, but like... It does have substance to it.
It has a lot of substance.
And it has a lot of value.
It almost has a substance abuse issue.
So I'm putting it at 2, but it might actually go up in subsequent viewings.
That's fine.
But it's going to be hard for me to rewatch that, but which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
All right. On The Craft, what do you got to say?
I'm going to give it a 3 for this one.
Really?
No, 3.5. I wrote 3.5 down. I will give it a 3.5 because I forgot that the transitions were so good in this. There were a couple things that I thought were like, meh, whatever. Like, the cinematography was good.
It was good.
I really enjoyed the cinematography. I thought like the visual, like the transitions to memories, that was really good. Mm-hmm. I liked their usage of music through this as well. It
Me
was
too.
Really good atmospheric. It really put you in the right spots.
Yeah.
They really had, a good thing switching back and forth between like Spanish music and English music when you're supposed to be in those appropriate areas.
Yeah.
But nothing like knocked it out of the park. Even that like cool flashback thing was like, meh.
Yeah.
They used one transition a bunch, but it was cool.
Yeah, I was also at a 3.5 for your same reasons. Like, the cinematography was nice, and I really liked those transitions. The set design was really good, too. Like, that bar was good.
Yeah, it was.
And, everything felt good, but was it blow me away?
No. Nah. A couple things stood out, but, like, overall, it just makes a really cohesive back, but that's not a 5 out of 5.
Yeah. Execution. So, acting and writing.
This one's also going to get a 3.5 for me, and that's, I think a lot of that's going to come from I really enjoyed how this story was put together, but like there wasn't a whole lot of acting that incredibly blew me away, especially because Sam's character was really one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Even though he had a lot of like emotional conflict and turmoil, he had really interesting relationship with Pilar, but like he was just so one-note through the whole thing, and since he is most of the movie, that kind of sours me on the acting overall, even though like there was a bunch of really good supporting actors.
Yeah, and it's just that's kind of on the character though. Like it's not really Chris Cooper's fault.
No.
He did well in what he was given and he was a very stoic character. Like he was very just kind of one note and that was all.
Yeah, it's just that's boring. And I will say quickly.
Thank you.
I hate movies where the relationship is between a stoic guy and a woman who has emotional range and shows it, because it always looks so awkward when she can pull off some kind of emotion and he's just there looking at the sand. It doesn't. Yeah. It's not a good dynamic.
It's really not, and I totally agree with you. I give it a 3 on pretty much the writing alone. Like it's a really well-crafted story.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
You have to give John Sayles credit here because like he crafted a pretty complicated narrative, has a lot of historical points in here that clearly took a lot of research or maybe just some background knowledge. And like there's some really good zingers in there that he wrote.
Oh, yeah.
And the acting was good, too. I really liked Kris Kristofferson, as I mentioned before. I really liked Matthew McConaughey and Frances McDormand in their very short scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
And the supporting cast was pretty all right. Yeah. Like there was nothing out there and noticeable about a bad performance.
No.
So I think everyone did a pretty decent job here.
Yeah, but I think the characters just didn't give anyone a particular time to shine, but what are you going to do?
All right. Rewatchability.
I believe that a second rewatch is highly recommended. I'm not going to watch this again. I will not leave if it's on. I would recommend it to people. And if I see someone watching it, I will go watch it. So I'm giving it a 3.
Wow.
But like, I'm not so moved that I'm going to watch it again anytime soon. But sure. I would see it again. I really enjoyed it. I'd probably pick up on more stuff I missed the first two times.
Mm. Yeah, I was, again, at a 1.5 when I came right out of the movie. I think after doing a little bit of like soul searching and doing more reading into it, I'm at a 2 because I don't really want to rewatch it, but I agree with you. I do think this warrants a rewatch, and you probably should rewatch it to get the full scope of it, and you're going to have a different experience with it if you do rewatch it after knowing everything that these characters go through. And so on that, I'll give it a 2.
Mm-hmm.
But that leaves me with a 10.5 and you with a 14.
Yes, it does.
That's a pretty solid difference.
We finally did it. We disagree on a movie. Fuck you, Kyle. You're so wrong and dumb. Oh, it feels good.
So that leaves you at like a 70% and me at like a 53, which yeah. Totally, that's how I feel.
Sounds
about it.
Sounds about our enjoyment levels. Yeah.
Do you want to get into some fun Letterboxd reviews then?
Let's get into some fun Letterboxd reviews.
All right, I got a couple here. I did read a lot and I went through lows and highs because I was interested to see what people said. I was really looking for a 5-star review that was like, any movie with incest is my jam, but I didn't find it, unfortunately.
That's the review you need to leave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we got 1-star here from Abby. This was from July of this year. She said, I'm sure this is great if you pay attention.
Well, Abby, I think I paid attention and it was great.
Yeah, I agree with her. Like this, if you're not paying attention, this movie probably doesn't any fucking sense.
You need undivided attention on this one.
We got 1-star from Larn, and they say, I don't know what the pronoun would be for Larn, but
Larn.
They say, was the incest subplot necessary, Mr. Sales? And like 11 question marks.
That was kind of how I felt too with how they concluded it.
I'm pretty sure that was my feelings too. I was like, really? Like, was that necessary? But yeah. And then we got 1 5-star review from Steve Sanders who says, the best film ever made about Texas and one of the best ever made about America. It's as good a mystery as Chinatown and John Sayles never raped a teenager.
Oh my God. Wow, I was not ready for that one.
Yeah, and so actually this review I had to do a little bit of research for because I was like, John Sayles raped a teenager? And so like I looked it up, couldn't find anything about John Sayles raping a teenager because I guess it didn't happen.
Because he didn't, that's good.
So what they meant was, Lone Star is as good as Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
Chinatown was directed by Roman Polanski,
who was found
guilty of raping a 13-year-old girl.
Yep,
and so that's the context behind that.
Roman Polanski is absolute human scum.
So that was that.
I'm glad you go through a multi-dimensional search for Letterboxd reviews. Whenever I do it, I click on whatever star rating I think would be fun and then just go for like 4 pages and take my top 3 and that's that.
Well, to be fair, this one wasn't that populated. Like, it's a very... I struggled to find certain ones. Like, those were, you know, kind of the funniest ones that I could find. Mm-hmm. And that last one was mostly for the shock value and the research that I had to do for it. But, so not a lot of people have watched this movie.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into awards?
Yeah, let's get into awards.
All right, so this movie was nominated for 1 Academy Award. If you had to guess, what would it be?
Screenplay.
Yes.
Nice.
It was Best Writing Screenplay directly for the screen, so Best Original Screenplay for John Sayles. It did not win, though.
Oh. That's fine.
So the other notable awards also required some research, but this was very weird. It won 6 awards at the Lone Star Film and Television Awards.
That's putting the fix in. Are you kidding me?
This baffled me, okay? So at the Lone Star, literally the title of this movie, Film and Television Awards, it won Best Film, Best Actor for Chris Cooper, Best Supporting Actor for Wrong Canada, Best Supporting Actress for Frances McDormand in her one scene.
What? Okay.
Best Director for John Sayles and Best Screenplay for John Sayles. Those are all wins.
Mm-hmm.
The Lone Star Film and Television Awards seemingly started in 1996. The same year that this movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was like, that's weird. And so I kept looking. It seemingly ran from 1996 to 2007, but I cannot find any reliable information about it online. Like, you, everywhere you click about it, nothing. If you look up Lone Star Film Television Awards, it only goes to the Lone Star 1996 movie and its awards.
That is so weird.
I really had to dig for this. It literally doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
What? So it, that's bizarre. Because I get, okay, I'm not surprised that this could be called the Lone Star thing because, you know, Texas's state thing, their slogan mm-hmm. is it's the Lone Star State. So it's yep. a like well-known slogan and stuff like that. So I could see a world where they have Texas-specific movie awards, where it's like something, you know, filmed here or about the state or had some kind of Texas connection. I yeah, can see that.
But they also have a Texas Critics Award yeah, thing.
But this doesn't exist. This is a ghost.
Yeah.
This is a specter that is no longer here.
So
just
I'm
some awards.
Yeah, I'm convinced that this was maybe created for this movie and wanted to fluff up its awards wins and then just dissolved after years of not doing anything. Literally, it says it ran until 2007. I can't find any information about any of its subsequent awards ceremonies after this. So if anyone listening knows anything about the Lone Star Film and Television Awards, please let me know because I was at a loss. My Googling, it reached its peak and the extent.
Is that where the budget went?
Oh my God.
They just used the movie budget to give themselves awards?
Oh, maybe.
We need to learn more.
Yeah, but do any of those awards surprise you other than the fact that the Lone Star maybe doesn't exist?
Yeah, because all of those awards they gave out are bizarre. The best actor, no. Best supporting actress, no. That's weird.
Yeah.
So I think the Academy side, that's fair. I would have liked to see it win. I don't know the other nominees, though, so I don't really care that it lost. I'm not so moved by that.
Yeah.
I'm glad it got that nomination, but no, nothing else surprises me.
Hmm. Well, let's get into some interesting facts and see if any of these surprise you.
Okay.
So I already mentioned that Joe Morton was older than Ron Canada despite playing his son. I really struggled to find interesting facts for this because, as maybe the letterbox has indicated, not a lot of people have an interest in this movie or have seen this movie or enough to
Shame.
Like maybe dig in some facts. And so basically these are statistics. It is the only non-Best Picture nominee from that year to be nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
That's interesting. That yeah. is a fun... It's not like an incredibly fun fact, yeah. but it's an interesting fact.
This also ranked as number 4 on famed critic Roger Ebert's list of the best films from 1996, so he really liked it. And this was also chosen by Time Magazine as one of the best films of 1996, also at number 4 in their year-end review issue dated December 23rd, 1996. So it did have its acclaim.
Yeah.
Yet it, even despite ranking that high on a very notable critic and in Time Magazine's list, wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
That's interesting. I mean, I kind of get that it's an outside looking in film, and I bet mm-hmm. you if they expanded it to another movie, that would probably be the one they go with.
Yeah. What one thing I did see in some of this research was that a lot of people compared it to Fargo in that they are both low-budget American films about crime.
Yeah.
And but obviously, Fargo is a black comedy that's actually good, and Lone Star is a very thoughtful crime drama.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, okay. And so Fargo got the upper hand.
Yeah. Also, so much more like off box office success than,
yeah,
than Lone Star.
So yeah. Where does this rank in your season list,
Kyle?
Right now we both have the same ranking of Fargo, Independence Day, Bottle Rocket, Trainspotting, Primal Fear, The People versus Larry Flint.
We are finally gonna have some difference here, I guarantee.
Guaranteed.
You, I am slotting this one in at number 2.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's high.
Yeah. Because you know what? It all comes down to one critical fact. You and I, we are men of the 90-minute movie. We absolutely adore a 90-minute yeah. movie. Well, how long was this? 135?
135, yeah.
Every minute was needed. That is not easy to do to me. In my opinion, yep. every scene was important, had weight, made a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when a movie can make me feel ready to watch more, at like 2 and change, yeah, that's a good movie. Number 2, yeah. easy for me.
I think this is going straight to the bottom.
No.
I think I liked Larry Flint more than I liked this movie.
Oh my God. No, my baby. No, you killed him, my boy.
I couldn't get into it.
Yep.
I really struggled to get into this. And for me, despite knowing all of the depth of this movie and knowing that it was very well crafted, very well written, there's a lot of poignant themes in there. I still didn't like it that much.
I mean, that's fair. It didn't have its shooty guns. No one had superpowers. It's not an MCU movie, so Kyle doesn't care.
Okay.
Not a single rat chef to be seen.
I mean, that would have made it a little bit better. I mean, come on. How cool would a crime movie be? But there's like Remy from Ratatouille doing the actual investigation.
No, he's the murderer. And no one knows why people are killing.
Oh, shit. Listen up, Pixar. Yeah. Crime thriller Pixar movie. It's Linguini. He's moved away from cooking. He's brought Remy to the world of criminal investigation. Okay? He's a detective.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Linguini Alfredo. Alfredo Linguini is his actual name.
He's not Alfredo.
Detective Linguini, okay? We start the movie with a murder. A murder has happened. We don't know what's happening. Detective Linguini is on the case with Detective Remy, okay? At the end of the movie, we learn that Remy pulled on his hair and did all of this murdering without Detective Linguini's knowledge.
Or, may I suggest, Remy did this. It wasn't Linguini who did this at all. Linguini had nothing to do with it. Remy found other people to pull their strings and commit murder. And they only figured this out because every murder suspect was wearing a hat.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Something like that. You get the gist of it. Pixar, call us.
All right, Pixar, call us. Yeah.
My phone number is in the show notes. No, it's not.
All right.
So 2 and 7.
Very different.
Yeah.
We finally broke it.
God, I feel so smart, right? I feel like such an intellectual elite now because I really appreciated the Artie movie. And you fell asleep, probably farting while you're watching it.
Yeah.
Because just so smart.
I just couldn't get into it. I'm sorry, guys.
No, that's fair.
It's fine. Okay.
That's fair. I'm kidding.
Well, if you're like Jason, you'll really like this movie. If you're like me, you'll probably fall asleep. And so we'll wrap this up. I want to thank you guys all for listening to this very long episode of season one of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. So that's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, and make sure to check us out on our official Discord. I would love to hear you guys' thoughts on this film or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message on Instagram, ask us a question, give us a recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills with a Z on Twitter. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes below. Make sure to leave a 5-star review. We would really appreciate it. If we had a 5-star review, we would read it off now. So don't just leave a 5-star review without leaving a little note. We want to read it out. We want to say your name, all right? We've been getting a little couple of 5-stars on Good Pods. So
we're up to 4. Wow. But none of them leave a review for us to read out.
We want to read. We want to say your name. We want it to grace our lips. We want to
kiss you.
So check back next week for another episode. We are actually going to be welcoming another special guest. More on that later. But here is a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
There is a mystery. Elusive. Unpredictable. Violent. It terrifies most scientists. But for a new breed, the challenge is saving lives. The research is deadly. The laboratory is nature itself.
That's right. Next week, we're going to be talking about Twister, so make sure to check that out before next episode. I believe it is on Netflix if you're in Canada, hopefully everywhere else too. So go watch Twister before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap.
Howdy bye. Bye. The howdy for goodbye. Bye.